because I've given you a photocopy of the actual text as it appears right out of the text of the Gemara, or the Rambam's text to the back of the Gemara, because there is a significant discussion around this principle as to the authenticity of the text. What exactly was the original text of the Rambam in this particular principle? And so, in order to bring you into that discussion, I sort of need to take you through the chronology of this issue. So I'm going to start with what has been the classic text of study for the Rambam's 13 Principles of Faith for hundreds of years. You open up a Talmud tractate Sanhedrin, you turn to the back of it, you have the printed copy of the Rambam's commentary on the Mishnah, in which, as we said in the very first class, in which is contained the text of the Ikarei Emunah. And there the Rambam writes, it's the upper right hand corner of the page in Rashi script and very blurred writing, so bear with me. Hayesod HaRivi'i, the fourth foundation. Hakadmut. Hakadmut means the notion that God is Kadmon. Now, Kadmon can mean several things, and that's one of the issues we're going to address. But the simplest explanation, he explains what it means. V'hu shenamin ki zeh ha'echad ha'amur, this one that we speak about, hu kadmon behechlet, is absolutely kadmon. What's the root of the word kadmon? Kodem, which means first, before everything else. V'chol nimtza zulato bilti kadmon be'erko elav. And everything else that exists is not as first in comparison to him. V'harayot al zeh b'kitvei HaKodesh rabot. There are many proofs to this idea in the Holy Scripture. V'hu ha-yesod ha-revi'i. V'ha-yesod ha-revi'i hazeh mori alav ma shekatuv, ma shene'emar, me'ona elokei kedem. God, who is kedem, is a refuge which we seek. So this notion of kedem, alokoi kedem hashivenu chadesh yamenu ke kedem, alokoi kedem means God who came first, who came before. God who came before. First principle involves, now, that's a simple way of explaining, that's one way of explaining this principle. Most translations, however, if you look at the commentary on the Mishnah below it, which is a translation from Arya Kaplan, he translates it as follows. The fourth principle involves the absolute eternity of the one whom we call God. Kedem, as I said, Kadmon has two meanings. Kadmon means first, Kodem. Kadmon also means that which it can be eternal, is Kadmon. In a sense of right.
First, that was beginning sometime.
Correct. So the first and eternal don't necessarily mean the same thing, but they are both legitimate translations of the word kadmon. And so the question that we have to ask is, which was the Rambam's intent here? Was the Rambam talking about the notion that God is eternal, or that God was first? That's the key question, or maybe both. And that's the question we're going to have to address. This is discussed many times in Scripture, and the Torah teaches it to us when it says Elokei Me'ona Elokei Kedem. In the context of the pasuk, and this I just want to make an observation, in the context of the verse that the Rambam quotes, the context of that verse would translate the word Kedem as eternal, without end. The context of that verse is not talking about the fact that God came before. Context of that verse is talking about that God is always there, always will be there, that he is always our refuge and our escape and the one whom we turn to. Elokei me'ona Elokei kedem. He is a ma'on, he is a refuge eternally. Elokei kedem. So that if I were to look at this text from the perspective of the verse that the Rambam quotes, and just from that perspective, the Rambam seems to be talking about the notion of being eternal, not necessarily being first. Of course, he could be saying both, but he doesn't seem to articulate that there are two ideas here. He articulates that there's one, okay, that God is Kadmon, and so we're left with a little bit of a mystery. Or that you began at some point or another.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean that you were created, but that God began. And what the question is, does God have a beginning? Not only, it's universally accepted by both translations, whether Kadmon means eternal or Kadmon means first. I think it's understood that Kadmon means without end. Keda means eternal. So that there's a notion that there's no ending to God. The question is there a beginning? Right?
It's impossible to have the eternal from the beginning and have to be first at the same time. There would never be a second in theory, right?
Right. Well, I mean, I can theoretically create an infinite line that has a beginning but no end. Infinity can go in two directions, but when you talk about infinity, you could start with, if we talk about, for example, mathematical terms, you could have a line that's infinite in both directions, or you can have a line that has a beginning but is infinity but has no end in one direction. So it's possible, at least mathematically. Whether conceptually it's possible, I don't know.
But since one of the earlier principles was that he was the creator, and there were all those other exclusions, that by definition that would leave him as being eternal. And when you get to this principle, then
how would you? In what sense would the earlier principles lead you to the conclusion of eternal? If eternal,
because if he created everything,
could still have a beginning.
Number one and number two.
But then who would have created? Who created?
Why does creation
him?
Assume? So the famous question of who created him. The answer is that God doesn't need to be created. God can just, in theory, if I entertain the possibility that God has a beginning, it doesn't have to be created. God could just be.
But if there was some point that he wasn't, what brought him into existence?
He just was. I mean, that's the famous question every child at some point or another asks, who created God? And we fumble around the question at some point or another. I'm not sure we ever really give our children really ever a good answer, because the answer we're about to give tonight is a little bit too conceptual for a child. But at least from a mathematical point of view, I can entertain the possibility of a beginning with no end.
But then he would have had to have created himself. No?
No. Creation is by nature. What does the word creation mean? It means I create the physical universe. God is not physical, therefore it doesn't have to be created in the classic sense of the creation of the world. We don't know what his existence is, so we don't know what would cause God to come into existence if he wasn't Kadmon in the sense of first. I raise it as a possibility. Obviously, we accept the notion, and I'll show it to you in the Rambam, that God has no beginning and no end, and we interpret the Rambam in that way. We do so in the Animamin, that God is, we say, the Hu Rishon Vuhu Acharon, we say it in our Tfilot, Ani Rishon Vani Acharon Mi Baladai En Elokim, we say it in the Yigdal, Kadmon L'chol Davar, Asher Nivra, Rishon V'en Reshit L'Reshito, that he's first and there's no beginning to his firstness. So clearly we interpret this passage as referring to both first and last, meaning no beginning and eternal. Right, first, before the world, and eternal. My question is, from a textual point of view, where the Rambam seems to be vague. That's one question. I'm going to leave that for a moment, because there's a much bigger question on this Rambam. Much more substantive question, and that is one that is posed by the Abarbanel and really a whole slew of Rishonim in his wake. And that is that this is essentially the last of the first four principles that will discuss God. From here forward, everything that the Rambam is going to discuss revolves around the relationship between God and mankind. Principle number five will be the notion of service, that we are obligated to serve God, to have a relationship with God, an obligation that must be direct, with no intermediary, prohibition against idolatry. Number six will begin to explore the issue of prophecy and communication between man and God, prophecy of Moshe, the prophecy, the giving of the Torah, the authenticity of the Torah, the nature that God is aware of our observance of the Torah. Everything from here forward will address the question of how we relate to God. So if I want to understand the principles of the Rambam that specifically focus on the nature of God, that's somewhat of an oxymoron, but on the nature of God, then I only have the first four to work with. Agreed? The Barbanel asks what is probably one of the most profound questions on the Rambam. The Rambam goes out of his way to articulate 13 foundational principles of faith. There were many philosophers contemporary to the Rambam, before and after, who argued strongly that the exercise was an exercise in futility, that we shouldn't be defining principles of faith. At one point, the Barbanel says that there are 613 principles of faith. So why do I need 13? There were others who argued that maybe with the exercise is okay, but he's got the wrong principles. What do you need 13 for? We could boil them all down to three. And from those three, we could create corollaries and postulates and extensions, and we could get the other 13. I mean, if you want to boil it down to the core, then let's boil it down to three principles instead of 13. There's all kinds of theories as to what was going on in the Rambam's head when he sat down to define these 13 principles. Says the Abarbanel, but if you're already going to go through that exercise, consistent with your own position, Rambam, you have left out what you yourself have said is one of the most important foundational principles of belief in God. And that essentially is, if you take a look at source number four, I think it's in source number four. It's the Abarbanel. That's the Abarbanel's answer. I'll come back to it. The question is not on this page, but source number four. The Rambam writes in a number of places, but this is one of them. Source number four is from the Mar Nevuchim. He writes, "De'ot ha'anashim bekadmut ha'olam ochidusho," with regards to the notion of the eternity of the world or its creation. So let me explain some of the phraseology for a moment. In the terminology of philosophy of the Middle Ages, there was a raging debate between traditional Jewish philosophers and secular philosophers or other philosophers. It's a debate that goes all the way back to Aristotle. And that is, was the world created or was the world always, or was the world always, period. The notion of kadmut ha'olam, that the world always existed, was a fundamental debate. And there were philosophers who believed that the world always existed. It was as eternal as God himself. And others who believed, no, the world came into being at some point in time created by God. Clearly, this debate is at the core of Torah and what we believe. And so the Rambam goes out of his way to defend the Torah perspective that the world was created at a specific moment in time, in contrast to and in argument with his philosophy teacher, if you will, or mentor, Aristotle. It's one of the major breaks from Aristotelian philosophy was the Rambam's acceptance of the notion that the world was created at a moment specifically and that the world is not eternal. What the Rambam calls Chidush HaOlam. Chidush coming from the word new. Chadash, Chidush HaOlam, in contradistinction to Kadmut HaOlam, or the notion that the world is eternal. So in medieval terminology, and that's why the translations I think are correct, in medieval terminology, the word Kadmut was used to refer to eternity, in contradistinction to Chidush, that which is created. Okay? So here the Rambam says, Deota anashim bekadmut haolam o chidusho. There are various perspectives out there with regards to this fundamental question: is the world created or is the world eternal? With regards to anybody who accepts the notion of God, there are three positions vis-a-vis the question of the world. Hadat harishon, first opinion, v'hudat kol mi she'yamin Torat Moshe Rabbeinu alav shalom, and that's our philosophy, that's our belief. Anybody who believes in the Torah of Moshe, as Torah is given to us, this is what it stands for. Hu she'ha'alam bichlalo, the world completely, v'tzono lomar kol nimtza movad ha'borei itbarach, everything created except for God himself, everything that exists, with the exception of God, Hashem himtzio achar ha-he'eder ha-gamur, was created by God after a total and complete absence, void of anything. This is the key phrase. The key phrase is that this chidush ha'olam, this creation, was achar ha-he'eder ha-gamur, or ha-eder ha-echlet, the absolute nothingness. V'she'ashem yitbarach levado nimtza v'lo davar bil'adav, that God created the world without any assistance, nobody with God, lo malach v'lo gagal v'lo mashe b'tocha gagal, nothing from the nature, nothing from the spheres, nothing, no angel. V'achakein yimtzi kol ela nimtzaot, then only afterwards did God create all of the different components of the world as we have it. I'm going to skip the next line for a moment because that gets into the issue of the theory of relativity, which I'll come back to. It's sort of the nice part of all of this, which we'll get to at the end. But if you go back, go to the next paragraph. V'yitbonen ze ha'inyan me'od. Contemplate this well. B'avoy shelo titchayev ha'tshuvot. Go to where it's to the next bold paragraph. V'zui achat ha'deot v'yisod Torat Moshe Rabbeinu b'li safek v'hu shenit liyisod ha'yichud. Second in importance only to the notion of the unity of God. Lo ya'aleh b'da'atcha zulat zeh, you cannot contemplate any possible perception, perspective of Torah without belief in this notion. V'avnu avinu alav ha'shalom itchil galot zeh ha'da'at asher hivyo alav ha'yun. It was this principle that God, that Abraham innovated and understood and expressed and taught to his work to the world. God acquired the heaven. So specific with regards to the notion of creation, we have a notion of creation. We talked about the notion, the Rambam's principle that God created the world. What has he added to the notion of creation here that he hasn't, that we haven't already discussed? Principle here that he's describing, and why that phrase Ha'eder HaGamur is so important, is a principle known in the terminology of philosophy by its Latin expression, creation ex nihilo, or in its Hebrew, Bri'ah Yesh Me'ayin. The notion that creation can be creation from nothingness. And the Greeks had this notion of creation from something. Some primordial mass or some object, that physicality that had to always exist, that is as eternal as God was, because God cannot create ex nihilo. Whereas our belief was that in fact creation could be ex nihilo because that's the definition of God. if I can't accept the notion of creation ex nihilo, I put a limitation on what God can do. God can form, God can merge, God can transform, but he can't create. If we believe in the concept of creation, we have to establish that that principle of creation means, that principle of creation means creation out of nothingness. Not out of the Chomer Nihili, some prehistoric or primordial
stuff
that can then have to be formed. So the question of whether the world is eternal or the world is mechudash or created is really a debate over the nature of creation. What is creation? Is creation absolute creation from nothingness, creation yesh me'ayin, or is it out of something, creation yesh me'yesh? That first principle back in number one didn't discuss that. All he said was that God created the world. Nothing in that principle addressed the question of the nature of that creation, ex nihilo or not. Then he went on to describe God being one, and God being spirit, not physical, and God being eternal. And we never came back to the question of creation ex nihilo. Says the Abarbanel, and this is the critical question, says, how could the Rambam have left out of the principles of faith what is clearly his, in his own words, one of the most foundational ideas in Jewish philosophy, the notion of Briah Yesh Me'ayin. That's the question of the Abarbanel. Briah Yesh Me'ayin seems to be missing from the Rambam's list of 13 principles. Does everybody understand the question? So what do I do with this? That was the question that... So the Abarbanel came up with a very creative answer. The Abarbanel's answer works as follows. Take a look at source number two.
Isn't it simply understood if you add 1 + 4, you get that concept? He creates, and he's eternal from the beginning, so therefore, put two together, nothing else.
Eternal from the beginning are two different translations of the word kadmon. Leave the word kadmon as eternal. Now what? What do you do with it?
Well, nothing else is, so therefore there had to be Yishmael. He created. He was before everything else. So when
Rambam hasn't said. The Rambam has said four things. He said that God created the world, and that the existence of the world is dependent upon God's existence. But that doesn't say anything about this nihilic material, pre-creation material, whether it existed or not. And he said then the Rambam said that God is one, that God is not physical, and that God is eternal. Well, so is this, according to the Greeks, so is this whatever this mass is from which the world was created is also eternal. So he's never come back to the question of Briah Yesh Me'ayin. That's why the definition of the term kadmon here is so critical. Because if I translate kadmon the way medieval Hebrew translates it, it means eternal. Well, that doesn't mean that I haven't gotten to Briah Yesh Me'ayin. If I translate it as first, then I'm assuming that God came before this physical mass of whatever it is. Then I've created a time frame. Then I can talk about Briah Yesh Me'ayin. But it depends on how I define the term kadmon. But we're getting that's getting a little bit too technical, if you will. Let me go back to the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel says as follows. This is essentially the answer that he gives, but he does something very creative with it. Ashivi omer she'amuna azot briya yesh miayin. This foundational belief in the creation out of nothingness. Kvahiviyah harav biyasod harivi. It is his opinion that it is alluded to here in this fourth principle. Biyomro she'achad hanizkad hu akadmon be'emet. When he writes that this one is absolutely eternal. V'chol ma shezulato eino kadmon kishenamichayu alav. Then the Rambam wrote that everything else that exists is not as eternal as God. Well, that seems to imply the totality of physicality, including whatever that prehistoric material is not quite as eternal as God is. Ha'achad kishuhu yitbarach. Sorry, I skipped a line. Ve'inyan ha'ikar ezeh yukhval shnei dvarim. And that's why he concludes, this principle includes, in fact, two different ideas. Ha'achad shikshuk yitbarach kadmon. The first is that God is eternal, or first and last. Ritzono lamar she'ein lo hatchala. That God has no beginning. V'lo yipol tachat azman. Nor is he bound by the limitations of the concept of time. This he's also taken from the Rambam. That's the piece of the Rambam I skipped. I'm going to come back to. That God, when we say that God is eternal, he's not quite as eternal as everything else. What does that mean? Nothing else is as eternal as God. What does that mean? That everything else, even if that which is eternal, even if we were to entertain the possibility for a moment that the galaxy was eternal, that it would go on forever. Because as I said before, a line can have a starting point and still be eternal. So eternal can be eternal from one end. It can have a beginning and no end. So even if I entertain the possibility that the galaxy is eternal because it has a beginning but no end, that's not quite the eternal that we're talking about when we talk about God. Because when we talk about God, we talk about God who exists outside of the parameters and the limitations of time. Remember what I said in the very first principle, which is that we can never really define God. Our definitions can only be negative definitions. It can never be positive definitions, because we have no frame of reference with which to define God. So when we talk about God is eternal, that's a positive definition. To which the Rambam quickly corrects himself. No, what I'm saying is he's not quite as eternal as everything else. Nothing else is as eternal as he is. So his eternity is different. How is it different? Well, for our purposes, something which is eternal because it has longevity without limitation. God is eternal not because he has longevity, but because the concept of time doesn't apply to him. See the difference? Do you hear the difference? If I take God outside of the realm of the parameter of time, time doesn't apply to him, then he's eternal by virtue of the fact that there's no time.
Isn't that some kind of, if God created everything, God created time?
That's what the Rambam says. And that's a major revolution. Philosophically, historically, scientifically, and ideologically, that is an unbelievable revolution. The scientific community didn't come to that realization until Einstein. Understand the implications of what you've just said.
What was it?
That time is created. Come back to it. I'll come back to it.
It's a tough one, because when you say what has to be part
of... Excuse me?
It's a real tough one.
This stretches the imagination beyond boggle.
Right.
This stretches the imagination beyond boggle. Without question. And I'll show you how. And I'll show you the implications of it. It's really astounding. But that's what he says. Now, before we get to the implications, I just want to show you something very interesting, which is how right the Abarbanel got this. When the Abarbanel wrote that, in his opinion, this notion of God's eternity is, in fact, the place in the Rambam's writings where he includes the concept of creation ex nihilo, b'ya yesh miayin. Let's just finish the paragraph. Yashini, the second idea included in this notion that God is eternal. Number one, that he created everything and he's outside the realm of time. Number two, Yashini, Sheshar hadvarim kulam zuloto ein behem davar kadmon kishon richei olav, that nothing that exists physically is as eternal, that they don't exist on the same plane. Sheim kulam mechudashim v'nivraim, they are all created. They are all starting at a certain point in time. That's creation ex nihilo. Only God is kadmon in the absolute sense of the term. Everything else has a beginning, and therefore the creation process was in fact out of nothingness ex nihilo. Why do I say how right the Rambam got it? Because the Abarbanel assumes this from the fact that... go back to the Sefer Yisuvim. Go back to source number 4, where I talked about where we saw the Rambam talks about this idea of ex nihilo. In the second paragraph, he says Vizu hadat. Vizu had in the second the end of the second paragraph where it's in bold. Vizu yachat
adayot vu yisod. I'm sorry. Where are you?
Source number 4, second paragraph, end of the second paragraph. Zui achat adayot v'hi yisod Moshe Torat v'ena b'li safek v'hu sheinit liyisod ha'yichud. And this is second only to the principle of the unity of God. Yabar Benel says in his discussion of this that line, hu yisheinit liyisod ha'yichud, doesn't mean that this idea is of creation ex nihilo is second in importance to the notion of God's unity, because that would make no sense. Why would he rank the values in importance? It means it's second if you count from the principles of unit, from the principles, and you count them down from unity, you get, count two more, and you get to ex nihilo. What's two after unity? Principle number. If unity is principle number 2, then this is principle number. Now, in the 1900s, in the mid 1900s, there was actually just passed away recently. There was a great 20th century. There was a great scholar, Yemenite scholar, of the Rambam's works, by the name of Rav Yosef Kapach. He was a Talmud Chacham of highest order. He was an academic. He was a scholar. He was originally from Yemen, and he was probably the world's greatest authority on the Rambam. And he had the greatest number of collections of the Rambam's original manuscripts. Remember that the Rambam wrote in manuscripts, and what we have is a printed Gemara. What Rav Kapach had was a manuscript from which, in the Rambam's own writing. And he writes in a footnote that in one of the manuscripts, in the Rambam's own handwriting, he found the gloss on this principle. And so he published a critical edition of the Rambam in which he included all of the different changes that he noticed and that he picked up from the printed edition. And one of them is this additional paragraph that he found in the gloss of the Rambam's manuscripts written in the Rambam's handwriting. And that's probably why it was in some editions and not others. And in that gloss, he writes the following. If you take a look at source number 3, this is Rav Kapach's version of the Rambam's Perush HaMishnayos, where it's in bold. V'da ki yisod hagadol shel Torat Moshe Rabbeinu hu heyot ha'olam mechudash. Know that the foundational principle of Torah is that the world is created out of nothingness, mechudash. Yatzro Hashem uvar o achar ha'heder amuchlat. God created it after absolute nothingness. V'zeh shetireh shani sovev sviv inyan kadmut ha'olam. The fact that I'm spending so much time talking about this notion of the eternity of the eternity of God and the world create and the idea that the world is created. Lefidat ha'pilosofim u'kedesh yehei ha'mofet ha'muchlat ha'mitziutoy itelek ha'moshebiarti v'rarti b'mara, so that people will know. Just as I explained in the Mor Nevuchim, that this is so important because there were so many philosophies and so many ideologies that disagreed with this idea. And that's essentially a direct reference to Aristotelian ideology. This is at the core of the Rambam's belief, the Rambam's understanding of Torah. That when we talk about creation, we talk about the notion of creation ex nihilo, creation of nothingness. Everything gets created, even that primordial stuff. There's nothing except God before that first moment of creation. But God himself has no beginning. And here is where the Rambam introduces to us the notion of what time is all about. The idea that you suggest that God himself created time. That's a major revolution. And he writes in a number of places. I want to show you the language of the Rambam. The first time I saw this, I was astounded because of the proximity, the terminology of how similar it was to modern scientific theories of time, which are very modern. The Rambam writes in the Mor Nevuchim, top of the second column. Shazman atzmo gamken michlal hanivraim. Says the Rambam, time itself is amongst those things which are created. Why do I say that, says the Rambam? Ki azman nimshach achar tnu'a. Because time is dependent upon, was connected to, movement. And movement is a specific state of an object that moves. And this object that moves, which is on which time is dependent for its movement, that object itself is created. And was created after nothingness. And therefore, you have to conclude, and then he goes to a lengthy discussion about this, is the fact that this is against the position of Aristo. He mentions Aristo by name at the end of this paragraph. This was the great argument with Aristotle. What is the nature of time? It actually is, that's the source of the argument. The secondary postulation of the argument is what the world was created, the world was eternal. The first part of the argument is what's the nature of time? And Aristotle had this notion that time is an abstract. Says the Rambam, time is not an abstract. Time is a created entity. And if I create a physical world, I create time with that physical world. And you can't have time before the moment of creation. And so that which existed before creation, by definition, has to be eternal, because there's no such thing as time. There's no clock ticking. Now, take that to its logical conclusion. God exists, according to principle number one and two, God's existence is completely independent of that which was created. Which means that he operates, his existence is completely unlimited by the limitations of the creation. Well, if, according to the Rambam, time is one of those aspects of creation, what is the implication vis-a-vis God? Today. That God exists, not only is not bound by time, that he exists in a existence that does not have time as a factor. There's no such thing. It's not that God is eternal because he lives longer than we do, or is eternal because he started before we did. Time, the concept of time, the limitations of time, the physicality of time, exists within this sphere called creation. And since God exists outside of that sphere, there's no such thing as time. There's no time clock. There's no ticking. He simply exists outside of the realm. So the question of who created God, the real answer to that question is that the question is faulty. Why?
God exists outside of this global space.
Because there's an assumption in the question. What's the assumption? That there's a point in time in which you have to begin. And so the question of, okay, God created the world, God came before the world, now who created God assumes that there's a linear timetable, and along that linear timetable, God comes into existence, and then the world comes into existence. But God doesn't exist within time. Time is part of the creation. So before the creation, there's no such thing as time. There's no beginning, there's no end, there's no eternity. There's nothing. Time doesn't exist. So how can you ask who created God when God exists without a timetable? Have I answered the question? No. That's why we can never give our children the answer to that question. It's the unanswerable question. Because what five-year-old who asks who created God is able to understand the concept that there is no timetable to God? What adult can understand that concept?
Children that are over
50. That's right. It is the limitation of the human mind. I am convinced, and I will come back to this a number of times, but I am convinced in my heart of hearts that God gave us an incredible ability for abstract thinking. And the human mind is a marvel of genius. But the one thing we are completely and totally bound by is a time clock. And the human mind cannot comprehend, cannot fathom an existence without a time clock. It is the absolute limit to the human comprehension. We can contemplate the universe's vastness beyond imagination. We cannot even begin to understand what existence without time means. I'll go one step further. When you think about all of the whole notion, the whole gamut of mitzvot in the Torah that are connected to the notion of time, and the role that time plays in the operational application of mitzvot, it's really remarkable. What's the very first thing that God sanctifies in the Torah? Time. Yom HaShvi'i. And it's an interesting observation because I was scheduling in a couple of weeks a 6-week mini-series on the calendar in all of its various facets. And the first mitzvah is Kiddush HaChodesh. The first mitzvah is the sanctification of the new moon.
Right.
So the first item to be sanctified is time, and the first mitzvah is Kiddush HaChodesh. But the interesting thing about the sanctification of the day of the week, of the seventh day, is that in the cycle of the calendar, it's the only unit that has no astronomical parallel. The day has an astronomical phenomenon to it. Whether it's defined as from our perspective of the rise and setting of the sun or from an astronomical perspective of the rotation of the earth on its axis. But a day has an astronomical phenomenon that creates the day. The month has an astronomical phenomenon that creates the month, at least in a lunar calendar, rotation of the moon. The year has an astronomical phenomenon of the cycle of the seasons, the length and day and shortness of the days. The only unit of time that we use in our daily routine that has no astronomical parallel to it is the week. There is no parallel to the week in the astronomy. It's a purely arbitrary definition by the Torah, sanctify the seventh day. We can enter into the whole discussion about mitzvot, aseshes man grama, the notion of positive mitzvot for women are exempt, in the famous perspective of Soloveitchik, that the purpose of those mitzvot is to ingrain within us an awareness of time, and that the biological internal awareness of time is something which women have. There's a whole realm of philosophical discussion of time that opens up to us when we realize that that time is at its core a created entity. It can be sanctified like physical place, like physical objects. Chag, Moed, is a sanctification of a unit of time, the same way that the Beit HaMikdash is a sanctification in place. From a scientific perspective, this was not discovered until Einstein discovered the theory of relativity, because that's essentially the revolution in science that Einstein created amongst the many, was this notion that time is a physical dimension in which we operate. We move through space and time, hence the coining of the phrase the space-time continuum, which Einstein introduced into the vernacular of science. Hundreds of years after the Rambam had essentially argued that time, by virtue of the fact that time is a function of a moving object, time is created by God. I'll go one step further. What is the second unanswerable question in Jewish philosophy? There's the unanswerable question to the 5-year-old. Who created God? What he said, that has an answer, it's just that a 5-year-old can't understand it. What is the unanswerable question to every philosopher? The Rambam himself asks this question and leaves it unanswered. We'll get to it at the very end of the course. What is the classic question in Jewish, in any philosophy that has never been answered satisfactorily? Contradiction between God's knowledge and man's free will. That's what you're going to suggest.
Yeah. and I was thinking when you were describing it, because we operate on time, we say, well, if God knew that I was going to do that,
right, then we have no free will. Correct. That's the famous question. If God knows what I'm going to do tomorrow, where's my free will? That's the question. And the Rambam asks this question, he asks it in Hilchos Tshuva, and he discusses it, and his answer there is, God's knowledge is different from our knowledge. We can't possibly understand how God understands things and how God's knowledge works, and therefore we can't understand the answer to this question. And that's an unsatisfactory answer, and the Ravid criticizes him for it. The Ravid has a very harsh expression. He says, Lo nahag Rabbeinu miderech chachamim. He didn't conduct himself in a manner appropriate for a Talmid Chacham and a rabbi in this paragraph, because he asks a question that can challenge our emuna, and he leaves it unanswered. And what's going to happen? Better not ask the question at all. What I think the Rambam is getting at is that there's a reason why we can't understand the answer to this question, and it's because it's the same answer to the question of who created God. The question is based on a faulty assumption. The question is based on a time frame. For example, are we bothered by the notion of free will when it comes to God's awareness of what we did yesterday? Yesterday, I chose to do X, Y, and Z. So tomorrow will be a challenge. Tomorrow, right? If God knows what I'm going to do tomorrow, then I have to know free will. But the fact that I did it yesterday doesn't bother me, right? It doesn't bother any of us, right? Except that yesterday, today, and tomorrow only exist from our perspective, because they're time-based. There's no such thing as yesterday, today, or tomorrow from God's perspective, because God doesn't exist within the realm of time. So the question assumes a timetable. God knows what I'm going to do tomorrow. How do I have free will tomorrow? There's a timetable in that question. But God doesn't exist within that timetable. He exists outside it. To God, yesterday, today, tomorrow, it's all, he's looking down from the outside in the world and the universe and all of its facets from today, from yesterday, from eternity till tomorrow's eternity.
But that's very hard for human beings to understand.
It's impossible for the human being to understand. It's impossible for the human being to understand. It's not only hard, it's impossible. And that's why the Rambam writes, Dibrat Torah b'lashon b'nei Adam, that the Torah terminology, the relationship with God, the mechanism by which the relationship with God operates, is it operates on our terms, not on God's. The notion that God relates to us on our terms means that from our perspective we can relate to God within a timetable. When I sit and I pray and I daven to the Rebbeinu Shlom that I pray for somebody's well-being, that they should get better, I'm assuming a timetable. I'm assuming today, and I'm assuming tomorrow. The Rebbeinu Shlom has no today, yesterday, or tomorrow. He's looking at it from the outside of the timetable. So how does that operate? We can't possibly comprehend it, and therefore we're not told to. That's the limit of the human comprehension. That's where our ability to understand stops. That's what God said to the Bible, to Moshe Rabbeinu.
But it's only in our terms, though, that we're doing it. I mean, it's not
right. It's in our terms because we. Beyond that, we have no frame of reference. We have no ability to do it any other way. That's what the Rebbeinu Shlom said to Moshe. There's a limit between the human being and the concept of God. You can't totally comprehend God. To understand this would be to understand God. This is the limit of creation. You can get all the way back to the beginning of the Big Bang. But science will never be able to answer what happened before the Big Bang. Because there's no terms and frame of reference to be able to describe that which exists before anything else and before time. When I first thought about this idea, I came up with another creative perspective on it. I'm not sure that it worked completely, but I'll share it with you anyway. Einstein built this theory of the limitation of time around a mathematical formula. And the mathematical formula has to do with the speed of light. Time is inherently connected to the speed of light. Speed of light becomes the term that the Rambam, that Einstein used, was the universal constant of the universe. That it defines everything else. So that as we move faster and faster, for example, through space, if we move closer, if we approximate the speed of light, we actually start to move through time. Where time slows down, time speeds up. Time and the speed of light are interconnected. You understand what I'm talking about? I'm not a student of physics, but enough about Einstein's theory of relativity, I think, is out there in the public domain for us to be able to converse with it. And he calls the speed of light the universal constant, because in all the mathematical formulas, it is the constant. Everything else is relative to it. He claimed, therefore, you could never pass the barrier of light because you would cease to exist. As you approach physically, as you move faster and faster and faster, closer to approximating the speed of light, three things happen. Your mass approaches infinite, your volume approaches zero, and time slows down. If you were to reach the speed of light, your mass would be infinite, your volume would be zero, and time would stand still. That is essentially physically impossible. If you can approach the speed of light, you can never reach it. It's the universal constant. It's the barrier of the physical universe. And I've always been fascinated by the fact that the barrier to the physical universe in scientific terms is a number. And it's not 42, 64, whatever Hitchhiker says it was. Right? The barrier to the physical universe is a number, 186,000 miles a second. It's a number. How does the barrier to the physical universe, the ultimate limit to the physical universe, that which creates the foundation upon which all of the laws of nature now operate, is a number of the speed of light? Where did that come from? I'll tell you what I think the answer is. I think it comes from the first moment of the Bria. Because what's the very first thing created?
Light, which is energy.
Light. I'm not even sure it's light as much as the rules of light, or the laws of light. If you look at the story of creation, you'll see that what God created were laws, were rules, were operational patterns of behavior. Let the earth produce grass. Didn't create grass. He created the principle within the world that exists that grass would emerge from the earth. Yehi Or is the very first declaration of creation. Before the sun and the moon. And of course the famous question is, how do you have light before you have the sun and the moon? Right? Unless what you have is the foundation of creation. If light truly is at the speed of light, and the laws that govern light, and the laws that govern energy, therefore, because light is a function of that, I mean, if you want to look at it from that perspective, you can broaden the perspective not just to the light that we see, but to the whole spectrum of energy as it's defined. Essentially, what you're arguing is that that God created at that moment the laws that would govern the physical universe, and that starts with the creation of the speed of light. So, how much of Einstein's theory fits into the story of creation, I've always been fascinated by it. I'll leave it as an aside. But the notion that the boundary of creation, the limitation of the human mind, is the fact that God exists outside of time and we exist within it. And nothing can break that barrier. No matter how hard we try philosophically, we can't dance around this principle. We think linearly. We think in time.
That implies that our understanding of time, or the notion of time, and the time as God had created it, are one and the same thing.
I wouldn't be presumptuous to assume that we understand everything God created, but I'm presuming that we are beginning to understand more and more as time goes on. I just think it's a great discovery of the 20th century, if you will, brings us back to the Rambam and gives us new insight into what the Rambam means, gives us a new insight into the story of the Bria. Is it the correct interpretation or other interpretations? Maybe. I don't know. But I find it fascinating. Thought I would share that fascination with you.
It still leaves one question unanswered. I'm looking at if the Big Bang is a shell, and that's when our time started, you could still have the concept of, like, God was in an outer shell. I'm just raising the question of when did God start? Time started with him, relative to him, in this shell. We don't have a time until the Big Bang happened. He made the Big Bang. Now our time started, but when he was in his shell, he had a time frame.
You were again talking in physical terms. No, but you can't dance around. You can't get away from it. And I appreciate the fact that you can't get away from it. But what you've done is expanded the concept of time to one more shell. God exists outside of that shell too.
I believe that, but I'm just saying, just because I can't relate to that first shell doesn't raise the question of, okay, God came into being in that shell. You see what I'm saying?
Came into being is an assumption of time. The phrase assumes a beginning.
We don't know the right question to ask.
Right.
And we use terms like, even verbiage like when and before.
Right.
That
we are assuming
is time.
Is giving
that's
it a time.
Correct.
That's time.
Absolutely
so
right.
We don't even know how to create the question.
Right. We can only operate within the realm of the physical, terms of reference that we have. And that's why, at the end of the day, that's the Rambam's conclusion. That when it comes to God, we can contemplate, we can try to stretch the imagination as much as we can, and we can begin to try to explore what existence for God might be, but that's not what our goal is. And I come back to this idea so many times, but I think it's so important. When the Rambam set out to define these first four principles, I don't think the Rambam was intending for us to begin to contemplate what is the nature of God. I think his intent was for us to contemplate what is the nature of our existence and how different it is from God and how much we are beholden to God and how much it plays a role in the relationship we have with God. And the understanding that God is giving us the Torah into our realm, we are bound essentially by the laws of the Torah because they help us relate to God in some way from our perspective, defined by God. But if we want to start defining what God is, we can't even begin to fathom what existence outside of the creation of time, outside of time is. So we are not physical, we have a spiritual component, just like God is not physical, because we have chelek elokim mimal. And we believe that God is the source of everything that goes on in the world, both good and bad, even though we don't understand it. And we come back to the notion of bria, of creation, to enter into a relationship with God that binds us in some way, because we owe our existence to God. And even time itself, our entire lives, are somehow connected to this notion. Every mitzvah that we perform is somehow connected to this notion that we are put here inside the bubble of finite universe. So what I think the Rambam is driving in all four of these is where he's going to go in principle number five, which is, okay, now what? Principle number five essentially answers the question of now what. I've described God as creator, created me, one, the source of everything that happens in my life, not physical, meaning the source of my spiritual dimension and non-physical characteristics, and eternal and unbound by the very time that holds me finite in this world. Now what do I do? Well, the conclusion from all four is that in some way I have to relate to God. God has created this world and created an ability to communicate and to relate to God from our perspective. I now have to figure out how to do that. How do I relate back? What's the mechanism by which I reverse this direction? And the next, therefore, conclusion is that in order to do that, I have to find some way of interacting with God, relating to God. How do I interact and relate to a non-physical, eternal, non-bound by time being? And that's where the Rambam will introduce to us principle number five and principle number six, the notion of Avodah Zarah and the notion of Nevuah, which is essentially a way of saying that there's a correct and an incorrect way of relating to God. There's a right path and there's a wrong path. And that's where these four principles will lead us now to principle 5 and 6. And that will lead us to the principle 7, which is the revelation of the Torah of Moshe, and principle 8, which is the accuracy of the transmission of the Torah. All of this is directed to a conclusion. In other words, and I sort of alluded to this in the first class, but I want to. This is really the time to reiterate it. I don't believe the Rambam simply wrote 13 principles for the sake of arguing 13 ideas. I think he had a hierarchy, he had a structure to them. And he was trying to create a philosophical structure that would help us understand how it is that we come to be bound by 613 mitzvot, the Torah's obligations, the rabbinic obligations, the halachic process. How does that affect my life and why? And so he starts at the foundation, he starts at the beginning, he starts at the notion of God and God's relationship with us. And then very quickly we'll reverse that into the implications that it has for our relationship with God. That's sort of the direction that we're going to be going off into in all of this. So that was my what I wanted to. I don't know if I covered everything or if I was clear or unclear enough, but that was essentially a discussion of principle number 4. Bezrat Hashem, next Wednesday night, we will begin our discussion of principle number 5.